this year, when lawmakers decide to ask voters whether they want to dump Illinois' flat income tax for a graduated model, they also agree to take a look at property taxes. State Representative Dan Brady is a member of the new Property Tax Relief Task Force. The Bloomington Republican tells WGLT's Ryan Denham they started meeting this month and are divvying up the work into seven subcommittees covering hot-button issues like school funding and local pensions.
Rather unique here with the task force. There's over 80 members, 80, between the House and the Senate. And so just the mere organizational side of things, is challenging when you have video conference calls going on task force, people in Chicago, Springfield, folks at different locations, it makes for some challenges. Those subcommittees are part of the agenda, if you will, of things we're looking at. And we're due back to have a report to the General Assembly and the governor at the end of December. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of work lies ahead for this group with the subject matter I just gave you and the complication of the size and of the committee from one standpoint, but the complication and in-depthness of the subject matter itself is very technical.
The task force was born out of a pretty busy spring legislative session when lawmakers agreed to ask voters whether to enact a progressive or graduated income tax, the thinking being that, okay, overhauling the income tax is an opportunity here to potentially alleviate some of the property tax burden. So how would you describe the goal of this task force?
How do we become a state that can stabilize and reduce property tax and yet still provide services? And how do we continue to look at the ever-rising cost of property tax as it relates to public schools throughout the state of Illinois? And I think we have to, first off, as we started to do, was to look at the history side of things, Ryan, and that is, the Illinois Constitution has contained a provision for taxing property in direct proportion to value since 1818. And since 1933, property taxes have been levied at the local level. Personal property tax for individuals was eliminated in 1969, and personal property tax for businesses entities was eliminated in 1979. Business entities now pay a personal property replacement tax, which is referred to as the PPRT. So, from a historic perspective, we look at those things. We look at the seven subcommittee subject matters that I've alluded to, and how do we pull that together to have a more efficient system from a taxing body standpoint? And a big portion of the local side of this whole equation for the way that the property tax is assessed, the role of the assessors and the role of the local government. And then as it pertains to the state, it seems, when people have property tax appeal issues and go to the state board, if you will, it seems that it's all shifted back on its local authority, local control in that area. And so I think we need to try and find and clarify for the taxpayer, first off, what the rights truly are. And then secondly, can we come up with some type of different formula that hasn't been looked at for centuries in this state?
What do you hear from your constituents about property taxes? How much of a burden is it really, in the words of the people that you talk to every day?
I think you'd hear from anybody, I pay too much property tax.
That's the prevailing view?
Number one. We just, at the committee hearing yesterday, we had a portion at the end of the task force meeting for public comment. And, of course, the public comment, no one stood up and said, gee, my property taxes are right where I'd like to see them in the state of Illinois. No, it was a complaint time. And one of the things, as I alluded to earlier, some of the complaint was the confusion of, on a state level, what really the authority of the Department of Revenue is and what it isn't. And there's also, there's not a mechanism in statute that I'm aware of from the standpoint of referendum-wise to increase what the threshold is of what can be charged in the 5%, but you don't have any mechanism in statute to reduce taxes from a property tax standpoint unless there's PTEL. And
what is PTEL, just for our listeners?
PTEL is, some counties have elected to have a area in which that they've capped, if you will, the tax side of things. And the PTEL is designed to limit the increases in property tax extension, total of the total taxes that are billed, and qualifying jurisdictions for non-home rule districts. So does not cap individual property tax bills or property assessment, but allows a taxing district to receive limited inflationary increase in extensions on existing property, plus an additional amount for new construction. Limiting that, you can see just that definition of what I just talked to you about, PTO, which referred to as the Property Tax Extension Limitation Law, is confusing in itself. And you know, for your average citizen out paying their property taxes, understanding this maze, if you will, of things related to property taxes is something that's very confusing for most. How do we simplify a system? How do we try and reduce or cap where property taxes are and still provide services? And under the PTO, it can be increased for a taxing body with voter approval. So there you go. You've got the approval to increase, but there's nothing in statute to talk about decrease. So what do we need to look at from a legislative standpoint to say we need to have that mechanism in there, if not statewide, home rule authority or counties that want to do something different? Obviously, then you run into the local schools who will tell you the only stability we have is that local property tax. Be very careful what you do or don't do here. And the last thing you do, don't send anything to Springfield that we have to turn around and try and get back from you.
So this task force is sort of predicated on the belief that property taxes are increasingly burdensome across Illinois. You know, but here in Bloomington-Normal, we've got Unit 5, our biggest school district, saying publicly, hey, we don't have enough money. We've got to do a referendum, or we've got to do a sales tax, or we're going to be cutting a lot of teachers. So how do you square those two things? How could both of those things be true at the same time?
Well, it's very difficult. You have, in a situation of Unit 5, you have obviously a growing district. I believe this year the school has over 250-some more students, for a total of well over 13,000 some students throughout Unit 5. And when you have growth like that, you have growth on the operations side of your district. And when you go to the property tax side of things, is your most stable source and your largest source of funding, and you have the ability of levying and increasing and doing things, the growth continues from that standpoint, and you go on to the property tax. Do we look at something that could be done, shifted more sales tax-wise? Do we look at some other type of funding of what the General Assembly does within their operating budget that we just did recently? Do we look at some way of what we appropriate to schools for the operational side of things, of doing something different there? The property side of things continues to be, in my opinion, the number one source of discussion and the thing that's noticed the most by the homeowner, obviously. So when you have these growing school districts and they go back to the property tax side of things and they talk about these referendums, those are all things that we're going to be dealing with and trying to see, is there a better way to do this? Is there a better way that we can provide school funding, stable school funding somehow, and not do it by increased side of property taxes again? That discussion will go on, but it's very difficult, as you alluded to, when you have school districts that have the growth, you know, on a local level, where are they looking at to try and control their cost? And I'm sure that they could point to examples, but it takes money to run the schools, and when the schools have large growth, you're going to have the request for more money.
Are there downsides to potentially shifting to other sources of revenue, you know, moving toward a more heavier reliance on sales taxes or state income taxes? Those things, you know, I assume would fluctuate with the economy in a very specific way. You might see, you know, if the economy plummets, sales taxes would go alongside that. Is there a downside to moving to that type of model?
Well, first off, I think everything's on the table. Is there a downside? Sure. There's a downside to the way we're doing it now. There's a downside to what we may change. And quite frankly, Springfield doesn't have exactly the greatest history of enacting some of the things that are positive, maybe well-intended, but ill-intended consequences come from a lot of things that come out of state government. And the idea that we come back with at least a report, it's not that we're saying we're taking this to the full General Assembly and we're going to have a vote on it, you know, next spring. We're coming up with a report with ideas. And where those ideas go from there, that's going to be the responsibility of and up to the responsibility of individual legislators per se, the governor's administration, the very body itself of revenue, and the Department of Revenue. So there's downsides to all this, but I think the biggest downside would be not looking and trying to come up with some ideas to make things better.
Well, task forces are a tricky thing. We've seen locally there have been task forces appointed for all sorts of causes and efforts, and sometimes they're dead ends. They don't produce results. They maybe produce a report, but not actual results. What are your hopes for this particular body? You said it's pretty cumbersome. There's more than 80 members to it. Do you think it's actually gonna lead to real change, not just a report?
I don't know. I guess you could go back to the Eichenberg report under Governor Edgar of school funding in the state. What did that change? Really, I've told you the history of our taxation and property tax in the state. It was a lot of work, and it did not necessarily change a great deal of things. And a couple of the ideas maybe have been implemented, but I don't think anyone could tell you that that report, with all the work that was done, had any lightning rod that came out of it. Do we run the same risk here? Absolutely. But I think the greater risk, as I said, is doing nothing and not looking at it and just letting property taxes to continue to rise.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with State Representative Dan Brady, a Republican who represents parts of Bloomington Normal. So let's pivot to a school safety bill that you worked on, just signed into law, that will assist districts in locking down classrooms in the event of an active shooter situation. So what does this new law do exactly?
What the law does is allows local school boards school districts, if you will, to have the ability, doesn't mandate, doesn't say they have to do it, but allows them to be able to utilize the what are now newer inserts into the locking mechanism of a door that can lock that door from the inside. In some of our older schools, and in particular, this was bill was brought to myself and Senator Chapin Rose from a school district, that if, in fact, there was a situation in that school to secure that classroom, a teacher has to go outside with that wad of keys and lock that door from the outside in the hallway. Obviously, if you have the problem you're trying to stay away from in the hallway, you are walking right out into the problem, trying to provide safety to those students that are inside that classroom. A couple things that we had to do in order to do that was we had to find common ground in the state fire marshal's office and some of the codes within the fire marshal's public safety codes for schools. And then we also had to amend the school code itself. And so while everyone wants safety and wants to, you know, do everything they possibly can for our students and our faculty and staff, there were some things that had to be changed that and you get to the fine print in the school code and the state fire marshal's code that we had to change, and we did under the legislation. And again, the legislation now allows for these insert locks to be used for the purpose of public safety.
So you mentioned this is not a mandate. This is all this does is give the option for school districts, school boards to pursue these. How much do these insert locks cost if somebody wants to proceed with putting like one on one door? Ballpark.
I wanted to say somewhere in the area of $40 to $50 you're talking about. Now, you know, that can get up there higher than that. Obviously, when you're talking about trying to retrofit an entire school. But some of the schools that still have that, fortunately, a lot of our schools don't have this issue, but some of the older school buildings that do, at least this gives them an option, a feasible option, hopefully from a financial standpoint, something that they can do.
Do you sense a lot of anxiety among teachers and administrators that you talk to about school violence, the potential for one of these situations popping up one day in their building?
The world we live in now, you never say never. Is it something that is on their mind daily? I don't know that, but having a sister who's a school teacher, certainly they have those concerns and are apprehensive and want to have the greatest technology there to protect the students and protect faculty and staff. And so how this weighs on someone's mind, especially in an older school building, we hope that it's a help from a safety measure and something that is manageable for that school district from a finance.
That's State Representative Dan Brady, a Republican who represents parts of Bloomington Normal. Dan, thanks for your time today on Sound Ideas.
Thank you very much, Ryan. Nice to be with you as always.
I'm Ryan Denham.
You'll find more politics and government coverage at our website, wglt.org. Just click on the drop-down menu under News.